almost didn't make it here this morning because my one daughter was up all night with stomach flu. And I thought, oh no, my husband's speaking. A friend said, it's okay, I can watch her. So I'm here. I was glad. But when I thought about what to say on a new year, I was thinking, I was reminded of growing up, my family didn't really do much for New Year's. My parents kind of, their thought was, well, what does the Roman calendar have to do with our new year? You know, Christmas is our new year, and it orients our life as the people of God. And over the years, as I've thought about New Year's and the individualism that's associated with New Year's in our culture, you know, our New Year's resolutions are so often me and my way of getting more of what I want, or getting a better body, or you know, being more efficient, or whatever our strategies are at New Year's. And yet, I was thinking about it. It really is a time. There is a time for the people of God to evaluate. There is a time for the people of God to consider and to think well about their environment and what is going on. And yet, this morning, I'd like to bring us something that isn't so much on an individual level. It's the people of God. And so I want us to look at a Psalm 130. And this is a psalm that the people of God have used historically to evaluate their circumstances. It's sort of been a cultural discernment psalm. And both Daniel and Nehemiah use this psalm. They use the words of this psalm to think about what's going on in their worlds and evaluate it well, and then use these words to cry out to the Lord and say, "What, in light of what we're seeing, Lord, what would you have us do? How would you have us respond? How would you have us think forward for the future?" And so, if you want to turn there, you can, and I will read it out for us. It says this, "Out of the depths I cry to you, Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. If you, Lord, kept a record of sins, Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, so that we can, with reverence, serve you. I wait for the Lord. My whole being waits, and in his word I put my hope. I wait for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning. More than watchmen wait for the morning. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love, and with him is full redemption. He himself will redeem Israel from all of their sins." At the beginning of this psalm, we're given this picture that we're supposed to enter ourselves into. We're given this picture of chaos. And the word there, the depths, it's supposed to remind us to think back to Genesis, the very beginning. This chaotic waters. And you know, in this picture of Genesis, we have this picture of gray sea and chaos, and then God increasingly speaks over it with structure, right? From weather systems, plant systems, animal systems, and then finally, humanity is told to make it flourish, right? They're given the challenge to say, take all of this stuff that I've made and make it this life-giving, life-bringing place. But it isn't a humanity by itself. It's humanity that's empowered by the breath of the Spirit. And all of that is supposed to be brought into our minds at the very beginning of this passage. And yet, when the psalmist is looking around, that's not what he's seeing. Instead of flourishing, he sees chaos and drowning, this thrashing and kicking. And it's out of the depths that he cries. And so two things to notice right at the beginning in these words is there's a really uncomfortable order of the words. The depths come first. And it's as if the psalmist is saying, it's in the shaking of our systems and our securities that we're to awaken to our true state of helplessness. If you think of over the last year, months, almost every system or structure that we have in our society is being shaken. Our health is being shaken. Our environment is being shaken. You think of all the environmental disasters that we've had, not so far away, but even closer to home. Our government has been shaken. The people that we trust in, there's been shakenness. And it isn't just all of the structures out there. There's been a relational shaking that's gone on. I mean, I would bet, I don't know most of you people, but I would bet there's hardly a person in this room who doesn't have some relationship somewhere that's been made awkward or uncomfortable in the course of the last months and year. There's a straining. And it isn't just a straining in our society, it's a straining in our homes, in our community. And it goes deep. The other day, about a week and a half ago, I was driving in Red Deer and I drove past this place where there was a fence that had orange display all over it. And it's there to remind us of the brokenness that runs deep in our society. And there's a helpless feeling when we encounter the depths that says, actually, we don't know how to solve this. We're to awaken to our true state of helplessness in the depths. The second thing is that the depths, they come first, but right after they come, it's an invitation. The depths come with an invitation to cry out to the Lord. And you'll see in that first verse, verse 1 and verse 2, there's three times, out of the depths, I cry to you, Lord, hear my voice. Let your ear be attentive to my cry. It's this repeated crying. It's not just like a, you know, thanks God for the food or my regular routine. He's been shaken and awakened to something that it's not going to be by his might. It's not going to be by his power that he keeps chaos in his environment at bay. It's only going to be by coming and trusting in the Spirit of the Lord. And he's invited to cry out and be heard. But as I was reading this psalm, I thought, you know what? It's always been that way. Societies in history, in times of shaking, they've always cried out to God or the gods. It's always been that way. But our culture, Red Deer, Central Alberta, where we live, we can't cry out to the Lord because our culture doesn't have a God. We don't have anybody to cry out to when we feel overwhelmed. Our worldview says, if we just work hard enough, you know, that phrase over and over, we're in this together, right? It's just, if we can just figure out our stuff, we'll get through this, we'll get by, we'll get over it. And in some sense, I think we're living in a time when, you know, most of human history would look at the things that we experience and they would think it was just magic, you know? Some of you have little kids. I have little kids. I've got three little girls. And sometimes they'll ask me things. They'll say, Mommy, how does that work, right? They'll see FaceTime. How exactly are we seeing them right now, you know? Or an airplane goes over. And my one daughter, a couple weeks ago, she was like, Mommy, how is that plane flying? And I try and think. And I'm like, I think in grade 4, I learned something about this, but I have literally no idea how to explain it. Somehow human ingenuity has solved it, right? We've solved these things. I don't know how they work. It's like we live in this magical world. And for most of our society, we've been able to solve it. And yes, there's been disasters in faraway places, but right now, we're shaken. We're fractured. And yet, we're either unaware that we are invited to cry out to God, or we're unwilling to. And instead, and many of us as Christians, we've been so bought into our culture that if we just fix it, right, it'll go away. We just need to find out what's caused this problem. So we put so much into what's caused it, what's to blame, or better yet, who's to blame. And it seems to me, as I read the news, and I think that seems to be the all-important question in a godless society. Who's to blame? Who's to blame for my struggling business? Or who's to blame for the fact that I've been stuck at home? Or who's to blame that my teenager is struggling with a lack of social life? Whose fault is this? And I find it so interesting that right now, when we're experiencing this shaking and these depths, that at the same time, our culture's increasingly speaking of something that they're calling social justice. We talk about social justice a lot. You hear it in schools, you hear it in the news, in conversations, in the media. And as Christians, we can think justice, yes. Oh, we get excited about justice. God is a God of justice, right? Because one day he is going to judge. And so therefore, we need to be just to the poor and the vulnerable and the weak. And yet in a godless culture, we're not talking about that kind of social justice. We're talking about a justice that says, because there is no God, me and those who think like me, we're going to have to claim justice for ourselves. We need to find the culprit and make them pay because we can't trust anybody else to do it. And it reminds me of this time when I was in grade 5. I remember back then, I don't know, lately my kids have been having tons of indoor recess because it's been cold, and we didn't get that. I don't think that was a thing back then. When it was cold, we went out. And yet the teachers, they didn't come out for supervision when it got super cold. And so I remember being in grade 5, and we had a bully in our class. His name is Andrew, and he used to kind of push down this one girl in our class, and he would pick on her and things, and there was no teacher out there. And so day after day, I kind of saw this going on, and I was like, oh, I have to do something about this. This is wrong. I better stop it. And so one day I waited, and I watched for Andrew, and so he came out of the school, and I watched, and sure enough, he started coming over by where this girl was. So before he got to her, I ran at him, and I just punched him in the face as hard as I could, and he was so surprised, and his lips split a little bit, and he was all, and he didn't even tell on me. I don't know if he was too embarrassed or what, but I never even got in trouble for it, and I still remember, I was so proud. And I thought, social justice, you know, where I become the bully, where I make myself the judge. And I don't know if you hear it in our society today, but the social shaming, the whistleblowing that goes unverified, the losing of jobs over public opinion. We love this. And it isn't just all those people out there. When I think of the amount of criticism that has come from the mouths of Christians in this last year. The amount of shaming with our words when we talk about certain people or people who think certain things differently than us. The unkindness, the finger pointing that the people of God have been a part of. And you know, when we're drowning, it's so easy to just push down the person next to you to try and keep your head above the water. But the psalmist says, for the people of God, that's not possible. Instead, he says this. In verse 3, he says, if you, Lord, kept a record of sins, Lord, who could stand? He comes from an entirely different perspective. He's saying that from a biblical worldview, there can be no us versus them. We can't be dividing into camps on issues and right versus wrong and what I think versus what you think. He's saying, no, we're all the guilty party. Why is our community broken? It's broken because of me. It's broken because of you. It's broken because we've been called to be spirit-filled bringers of life to Red Deer and Central Alberta and the places where we are. And we haven't done a very good job. And he says, we can't stand. And the Christian is one who says that whatever the issue is, maybe I didn't cause a particular issue. Maybe you didn't cause residential schools, or maybe you haven't caused this, that, or the other thing. But as a community of Christians, we say, I'm the first to admit I'm deeply implicated in the guilt of our society. That's what Daniel does. That's what Nehemiah does with these words. They didn't cause going into exile, and yet they enter in and they say, Lord, before you, we can't stand. The Christian is one who knows we are not equipped to play the judge because we've had to experience forgiveness, as he says in verse 4. He says this, with you, there is forgiveness. And this is the first, he makes three with you statements in this passage. The first one is here in verse 4, and then down in verse 7, he says, with the Lord is unfailing love. And then right below, with him is full redemption. And what he's doing is he's making a case of saying, why is this God worth crying out to in our struggles when we don't know what's next? Why should we cry out to him? Well, first, with you, there is forgiveness. What he's saying is, he's saying, you won't find forgiveness like this, merciful forgiveness. You won't find it anywhere else. In his culture, it was an eye for an eye. In our culture, it's social, this kind of mob-style justice. It's the same. It's no different. What he's saying is, we're really good, it comes natural to us to point out what's wrong with each other. It's easy. It's natural to do. What's not so natural is merciful forgiveness. We need Jesus for that. We need Jesus' people for that. To understand that we're Christians means we understand that I am mercifully and undeservedly forgiven so that I can be a merciful forgiver of the undeserving people in my life. It's to understand that you are mercifully, undeservedly forgiven so that that person in your life who is undeserving, you can show them mercy. And it isn't a cheap kind of forgiveness. You know, sometimes we talk about, I forgive them, but I sure don't want to run into them, right? You know, Martin Luther King Jr., he wrote of Christian forgiveness when he said this. He says, we can never say, I will forgive you, but I won't have anything further to do with you. Forgiveness, he says, means reconciliation, a coming together again. Why are we forgiven? We're restored in our relationship with God so that we can be restorers. That's how it has to be. We don't have an easy out, like it's just in our words, our forgiveness. In the psalm, it says this, with you there is forgiveness so that we can, with reverence, serve you. I thought about that and I thought, think of all the unforgiveness and all the hurt that's happened in the course of the last months. What if our ability to be the people of God actually is connected to our ability to receive and extend forgiveness? What if we actually can't serve him when we have these hindered relationships in our lives, these areas where we maybe have a cheap forgiveness, but it isn't actually lived out in our experience where we bring people back again? You know, when I punched Andrew, I re-communicated to him that the hardest hitter wins. And while in the psalm, this psalmist doesn't know of Jesus' forgiveness, but he knows the character of his God. And he knows that God's character is a different kind of justice than the justice I was trying to seek out. It's a justice that says, not only does Jesus pay the penalty, take the hit for us, not only does he say the sinner is not guilty, but he invites the sinner to be a part of his family, to wear the family name. He invites the sinner and says, you can actually come be at my table and get all of the blessings that I would give to you. It's this restored relationship. And regardless of what we've done, all we have to do is say, Lord, I can't stand before you. It's a posture of humility. And whether we've done it 100 times or whether in our heart, our hearts stayed hard, we can always come. Today we can come and say, Lord, I cannot stand before you. And it says, with him is forgiveness. Second, with you, that it says, is with the Lord is steadfast or unfailing love, depending on your translation. What the word really means is it means stubborn love. With the Lord is stubborn love. In other words, God doesn't budge in his commitments to us. I was reading in the news maybe a week or two ago, and there was this company that had laid off all of its older staff because they weren't able to bridge the technological gap. I thought, isn't that just the way our world is? You know, years of service and then, sorry, doesn't suit us anymore. All the broken relationships and broken promises. And I was thinking about our school systems, and we've got a friend who lives with us, and he's an EA, and he just talks about some of the brokenness in these kids. You think of all these young people growing up in our community. So many of them, they don't have any clue what stubborn love looks like. They've never experienced it. And what if we have people in our lives, people on our streets, people in our classes, that might never get to experience God's stubborn love, except through you and me, chasing them down, showing it to them. With him is forgiveness. With the Lord is unfailing or stubborn love. And then it says, with him is full redemption. In other words, it's saying God is a rescuing God, right? He's fully capable. He's fully capable of restoring. He's fully capable of doing it. And we're supposed to remember back to the idea of slavery, where God buys the Israelites out of slavery, or the Old Testament uses that word redemption in a rescuing of enemies. But if you look to the bottom of verse 8, what's the great enemy that we need rescuing from? It's not secularization, or it's not, you know, the government or whoever we think is on the other side of us. It says it's, he will redeem Israel from all their sins. It's corporate. Our sins. The things that have gotten us in the depths in the first place. That's what we need rescuing from. Our battle's not against flesh and blood. We know this. It's not against flesh and blood. It's against the principalities and powers that are at work in Red Deer, in Central Alberta, in our homes, in our families. And in our godless culture, we have no one to blame for our problems except other humans, right? We have no one to reach out to. We have no one to cry out to except, hopefully, maybe some strong human who's got some good idea. And yet, for the people of God, it says, with him is forgiveness, with him is unfailing stubborn love, with him is full redemption. Therefore, the people of God are to respond with verse 5 and verse 6. It says, I wait for the Lord. My whole being waits. And in his word, I put my hope. I wait for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning. More than watchmen wait for the morning. When I read those words, we got so many good Christian songs that talk about waiting. And I love singing songs about waiting. I love singing about it a lot more than I like doing it, right? And I have a situation in my life right now that I am having to wait on, and I find myself so quickly drawn to our godless way of doing things. I can get up in the morning and I can say, God, you have got this. And by lunchtime, I am Googling on the internet. I am trying to do everything I can to try and solve this problem so that I don't have to wait anymore. It's hard to wait. Waiting's a scary place. It's a scary place being in the tension between where we want to be, where we think we should be, and where we're actually at. We've got struggles with our kids, or we've got, you know, a broken relationship, or we've got a situation that we know is needing to change. And it's hard to wait. Why is it that we're so impatient? I was doing some reading and I came across Henry Nouwen. Henry Nouwen he's one of the most influential writers, Christian writers of the last 100 years. And he said this. He said, we're impatient, we're incapable of waiting because we're fearful. He says, impatient people are fearful people. I thought about that, and I thought, I don't like that very much. It sounds better when it's impatient for some reason. You know, we've just come through the Christmas season where we hear all of these, do not fear, right? The angels come and they say, don't fear, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. And yet for so many of us, sometimes we don't slow down enough to know what is it that we're actually afraid of? What are we running from? Now he says, impatient people are fearful people because it is when we are afraid that we want to get away from where we are. When I think about myself and my situation, what is it that I'm afraid of? Why can't I rest? Why can't I be still? Is it because I don't trust the Lord? Is it because I don't think he's going to be enough? He's not going to show up? What are we trying to get away from? Why can't we wait? And the psalmist says, waiting is the Christian posture, is the posture of those who follow God. And there's three things that I want to point out in the way that he waits. The first, we can see in just the element of the way that he slows it right down. He says, I wait for the Lord. My whole being waits. And then again, 2 seconds later, I wait for the Lord, right? We get this repetition and we're supposed to understand, you know, this isn't just an inconvenience that's being put on him. You know, like I got stuck waiting at the dentist for 30 minutes, you know? A waiting that happens to us on the way to some important activity. Waiting is the activity. That's what we're doing. We're actively waiting. That means we're deciding, we're choosing to practice believing in what we don't see, believing in what we don't experience. As the people of God, we practice and we remind ourselves, we place reminders. I'm doing this right now in my own life. I have reminders in my house so that when I'm so quickly drawn to try and quickly solve it myself, I have an intentional reminder that causes me to actively come back and say, nope, this may be uncomfortable. This may not be very efficient. It might be scary, but there's something for me here. The Lord has me here and there's something for me here. And whatever our experience is of the things that we long for, God has something for us here. In this strange, you know, 2020 beginning of the year where the whole world is shutting down again, God has something for us here. And our ability to either have this time be a waste of our time or have it be the Lord's gift to us is dependent on if we're going to actively wait on him or not. Waiting is active. The second thing that I saw from this passage is that waiting is watchful. Alert. You know, the psalmist, he uses this metaphor from his everyday life of the watchman. And the watchman was a person who would be assigned to wait, sit up on a tower, and literally watch the horizon. What's he watching for? He's watching for invading armies or during the community's ripening harvest for thieves or animals that would come in and steal. And the watchman's ability to pay attention has drastic implications for his community. They're either going to starve or they might die or they might be destroyed. Will he be watchful? In the Old Testament, the prophets are often called watchmen. You know, they're chosen by God to pay attention to cultural dangers. And in Luke, in the New Testament, Jesus ramps it up and he commands his followers, he says, watch. It literally means pay attention, like keep your eyes open. Watch. And then he says this in prayerfulness. Watch and pray. And in other words, it's Christians, we don't just wait as in we wait around and watch and whatever happens. Oh, I guess that was the Lord's will, and we just do nothing. It's the idea of understanding that the only way I'm able to actually see well, to actually judge and discern well, is if I'm coming to the Lord with the things that I see and I'm offering it up to him. It's this watchful, prayerful experience that is called for by the people of God. And there's an earnestness here. It says more than he watches for the morning. you know, that'd be a really boring job, watching for the morning. We'd have machines doing that for sure, right? We're not going to do that, stay up all night. The only thing we stay up all night for is playing video games, maybe, or watching TV, or not this kind of paying attention. And when I was in college, I went through a season of my life where I had severe insomnia, and they had me on all sorts of different medications, and they were testing me for whatever, all these things. But I was getting really bad, and I was going 3 nights in a row, no sleep at all, and my body was just starting to break down, and I did not know what I could do. And while I was staying awake, I wasn't so much being watchful. I was just trying to survive. And one morning, I got a phone call, and I answered my phone, and it was my dad. And he said, "Julie." And I answered the phone, and I said, "Yeah." And I was all groggy, and he said, "How are you?" And I looked, and it was like 7 in the morning, and I realized I had been asleep. So then I was angry, and I was like, "You just woke me up." And he said, "Did you sleep all night?" And I started thinking, and I was realizing, I said, "Yeah, Dad, I think I slept all night long." And he said, "Good, I've been up praying for you all night long. Now I'm going to sleep." And he hung up the phone. And I often think back to that experience, because that's what we're called to, is a watchfulness on behalf of. Watchfulness for our community, watchfulness for our family, watchfulness for the people in our lives. And it isn't that, you know, that we need to stand guard for Red Deer and it's all on our shoulders or that kind of thing, or that you have to stay up all night praying all the time. I've never stayed up, I don't think, all night praying. But it's the picture that we each actually have been given a little corner of Red Deer. We've been given neighbors, we've been given family members and people that God places on our hearts, issues that God places on our hearts, and we have been called to be watchful for them. And as we enter a new year, are we being watchful as the people of God? Are we attending well? I have some people in my life, and they're super good at this. They've got their list, you know? Maybe you know these people. Maybe you are one of these people. You've got your list, and in the morning, you are praying for your list. I have one man in my life, and he marches pretty much while he prays for his list. And you know, if you're on his list, you want to be on his list because he's going to watch for you. And he does this all the time. And, you know, and some of us aren't that way. We have good intentions, or maybe we could come and go home and say, "I'm going to pray more," you know? And then we don't. We get distracted or we do other things. And I think, I don't know if it's been the virus or COVID or if it's just been our comfortable culture, but it seems old-fashioned for me to say this, but, you know, we didn't used to watch alone growing up. I remember being a little kid, not much bigger than this little guy here, and we used to get taken to Wednesday night prayer meeting, we called it. Seems very old-fashioned to talk about now. We went to Wednesday night prayer meeting, and I didn't go there because I chose to go there. I went there because I had to go there, and we would come in, and I didn't want to pray, and I didn't know how to pray, and I would go, and these old people with walkers were there, and they would gather, and they looked like they were about to, you know, die, and then we'd start praying. And these seasoned watchmen taught me to pray. And they taught me to the words, and they taught me the posture, and they taught me how to stand on guard for the people that have been entrusted to us. And so often, right now in our society, we think we just have to pray our list by ourselves, and we have to sit up on the wall and keep our eyes open. We don't. We don't. If we don't have accountability for our watchfulness, we're going to get this wrong. We're going to miss it as the people of God. We're going to try and solve it ourselves. And if you have good accountability in your watchfulness, perhaps there's someone you can invite in with you who might need the invitation or the prompting. And if you don't, can I encourage you this year to find somebody to watch with you? Because our Christian witness depends on it. Waiting is active, waiting is watchful. And then the final thing on waiting that I want to say is that we don't grow weary because we're waiting for a sure thing. The watchman's waiting for the morning. He knows it's going to come. He's not wishing. You know, we wish for a lot of things. I wish for a job situation that I like. I wish that it was going to be warmer than just -5 for more than one day. I wish that, you know, COVID would go away. And we wish these things, right? He's not wishing. He's waiting for a sure thing because he knows the morning's going to come. He knows it's going to come. And many of us, we wait, we do wait. We pray and we have people in our life that we pray for. We have things that we long for. We long for God's Spirit to come and pour out on us, to bring us back together again. We long for these things, and we sometimes feel like the night's getting long. And sometimes we feel like things are going in the opposite direction instead of the direction that we want it to go. And when I think about the watchman in his waiting, he has to wait, doesn't he? It's his job. He has to wait. And he doesn't control the sun, but he can count on it. And while we don't control the presence of God or the things that he will bring and do into our lives in this new year, we can count on him. And in our uncertainty, we can open our hands and the situations that we face and the people that we don't know where they're at, and we can watch and get ready because he is coming. He will come. And so today, I guess my closing words are, how do you need to be ready? How do you need to be ready? Is there a relationship in your life that is not reconciled? Is there someone in your life that you need to extend mercy to? Maybe it's a prayerfulness piece. Maybe it's a watchfulness piece. Maybe there's some things that you need to take on in order to actually put yourself in circumstances where you can be watchful. Maybe it's just taking the Lord seriously on his invitation that the crisis you're in or the situations that you're facing, how can you make that a reminder? How can you make that a reminder that it's an invitation, and every time you face that problem, you're invited to pray, even just quickly? Or maybe it's just the cry out for mercy and knowing that with him is forgiveness today. Whatever you face, let us remember for this year that more than the watchman waits for the morning, the God that we wait for is sure. He is sure. Thank you. Amen.